Welcome to Box Box Box, the Aussie F1 podcast. In this week's episode, we discuss the teams and drivers for the upcoming 2019 season of Formula 1, work through the various liveries of all the teams, whether good or bad, and run through all the new regulations. So strap yourself in, pour yourself a shoey of your favourite beverage, and enjoy the ride. Welcome to the 2019 inaugural edition of Box 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 F1, the Aussie F1 podcast. I'm here in the studio today in lovely Adelaide, where it's a beautifully warm 37-38 degree day here with my colleagues. I've got Michael Niccolo to my left, Daniel Ball to my right. My name's Izzy Reilly. Welcome to the show, everyone. We've started this really exciting project to bring an Australian-themed podcast to the world, and we hope that you are going to enjoy the show. So today, guys, we've had a couple of rehearsals prior to this show, but today's our first official show, and I hope we're all excited to crack on with it. But I'll just say good day to you to start with, Mike. How are you feeling today, mate?
Good, Izzy, mate. Very excited. Sitting here wondering whether we should tease some of those first couple episodes that we did in-house that we've played with. Maybe we'll put out a little bit about us, a little bit of a snippet, saying who we are and why we love F1. Very excited to talk about 2019. It's going to be the year of Ferrari. That makes me very, very happy.
Mike, you are a very, very big Ferrari fan, and there is a very good story to go along with that for good reason. We'll probably won't go into that right at the minute as we're going to concentrate on the 2019 season. But Daniel, how are you feeling, mate?
I'm fantastic. I'm really excited about this season. I think it's going to be fantastic with some new members coming in, some new rookies coming up in the season. Mm-hmm. It looks really good and really exciting with the new reg changes, hopefully, which we're going to talk about today, I believe.
We sure are.
We should hopefully bring in some good close racing, but we'll see how it goes.
Now, we're going to run through all of the teams, give them a quick rundown. We're going to have a bit of a chat about both drivers on the team. We're going to talk about the liveries, and then we'll also talk about the regulations towards the latter end of the podcast and how that might affect certain teams and go from there. So we're going to kick off, guys, with pretty well in race order or championship order from last year for the constructors. So we're going to start off with Mercedes now. Who wants to kick off with Mercedes? Anyone want to have a chat about the new team members?
The car looks great, but does it look any different from last year?
No.
I look at it and I just, you know, it's the same car we've seen for quite a while.
Yep, silver
nice
arrows.
Silver works. That lovely, you know, that teal through it, the Petronas green,
That is what it's called.
Petronas green, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what we'll call it from now on.
Sounds good, mate.
We'll trademark that. From all accounts, the car is good. Lewis has said that probably going to be the closest year in some time.
That'd be good.
He doesn't feel that they're way ahead of everyone else. Much needed.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think they were that far ahead of Ferrari last year either. It wasn't until the second half of the season that they suddenly kicked into gear.
Yeah, the Ferrari just kept spinning around.
You spin me right round, baby, right round.
So the teammate to Lewis is obviously...
I don't know. Who is it?
Valtteri.
Oh, Valtteri. Sorry.
So Valtteri had a...
You know, the bridesmaid.
That's right.
Fairly disappointing 2018.
And a winless season.
What's the go? Is he just... Is he a career number two? Career number two driver?
Yeah.
Yep. He's there to placate Lewis and...
Rubens Barrichello 2.0.
Yeah. Unfortunately for Valtteri. Do we think he's got any intention to move elsewhere other than Mercedes? You know, would he benefit from going to a midfield team?
Who does he go to?
Well, ask yourself this. Would you move? You're not the most talented guy on the grid. You're at potentially, in the fastest car.
Yep.
With a huge team with one of the biggest budgets, getting paid a bucket load, picking up podiums and potentially race wins. If something goes pear-shaped with Lewis, you may have a chance to skate in
and win a championship.
Do a Nico Rosberg.
Yep.
Why would you leave that? Where are you going to go?
Stephen Bradbury.
where does he go? Back to Williams and dead last?
No.
Good point, Mikey.
He can't go anywhere. He can't go to Ferrari. Well, he could go to Ferrari, but he's not likely to. As you said, he's in a top level team.
Yep.
He's unfortunately he's a bridesmaid to Hamilton, absolutely. And I think that's going to be his position, unfortunately, unless he gets, you know, a fire under him and he suddenly goes, you know what, I want a championships and starts pushing. Maybe he can get a head game with Hamilton and beat him in his brain like Rosberg did.
I don't think he's as tough as Rosberg. Like, honestly, I think Rosberg is a very, very astute, clever man. And look, Valtteri might be a smart guy as well, but I just don't think he's got that inner gumption that Rosberg had. And you know, Rosberg dropped the mic after he won that championship, and probably rightly so.
I don't think Valtteri has got that. I'll just step on your toes to prove you that I can do it kind of thing.
That's
Rosberg did. Rosberg said, you know what? I want a championship and I'm going to do everything I can to get it.
Yep.
And when I'm done, mic drop, I'll walk away. Yep. I'm done.
Yeah.
I've done what I came out to achieve. Mm. I don't think Valtteri has got that in him. I don't think he's got that killer instinct about him.
I agree. Right.
Speaking of killer instinct, let's move on to the next team in the championship. And now I see you salivating, Michael.
It is the most attractive car for 2019.
It's pretty sexy.
That matte red finish, it is gorgeous.
Yep.
The white and black accents everywhere. Ferrari have nailed this car.
Yep.
I think Renault looks better. There's bias games going on here, by the way. Look,
to me, they have nailed that car this year.
It is a beautiful looking car. Absolutely. Yep. Fantastic. It looks good. How are they going with their tobacco sponsorship game?
I'm not sure how does that fit into the equation. So just feel so close in Mino, for those who don't understand Mino, what I'm talking about.
Mission win now.
Mission win, that is now. That is Philip Morris.
Okay.
Now, I understand that in Australia there's going to be a challenge about it to whether they can actually run it on the car or those sorts of things with sponsorship with tobacco companies. I haven't heard anything about it. There was talk on it a while back.
Although if it happens that they need to blank it out, they'll just blank it out. Mm. I'm sure it's
back to the barcode.
Yeah. It's not going to be the only place in the world that they have issues with that, I think. So, you know, maybe Ferrari might have to start thinking about
pulling out a tobacco altogether. Do you know, until you mentioned that, I had no idea that
Neither did I originally until I read an article about it.
There you go. There you have it.
I think all those articles are going to do is make that connection and then put that in people's heads about tobacco.
Mm.
The three of us are sitting here. We're F1 fans. We didn't know that Mission Win now was
oblivious.
Well, the fact is there's tobacco money that goes into F1, always has, probably always will to some extent. Move on. It's not advertised on the car. No one's flashing cigarettes. No one knows the difference. We're here to enjoy the cars and the spectacle.
Yep.
Let's not politicise it.
Agreed. All right, so not enough about the cigarette money. Let's have a chat about the drivers. We've got probably the most exciting pairing of drivers in the lineup. You've got a four-time world champion in Seb Vettel, and you've got a very, very determined and very talented second-year driver in Charles Leclerc, as he's probably pronouncing it himself.
And just so that we're all aware, there is a little bet going on between me and Michael regarding the points championship title at the end of this. I've backed Charles.
in true French fashion, Leclerc will fall flat on his face.
To eat cheese and roll over.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at these two guys. So Seb is going to be extremely hungry. He hasn't won since, 2014? 2014 is the last championship.
5 years. Well, Lewis won the last five, so.
Yeah, so he is going to be absolutely chomping at the bit, trying to nail this championship for Ferrari. And it looks like everything that we've seen so far this year looks like he's going to have a very good chance. So.
With that car that they've got this year, just watching bits of the, and we'll go into this further next episode, from the winter testing, Ferrari looks like a very strong car. Now, whether Mercedes and the other teams are sandbagging, I don't know, but Ferrari certainly looks very strong.
Let me just correct. I said Lewis won the last five. Mercedes have won the last five. Four of them being Lewis, one was Nico.
Yep.
Do you want to explain sandbagging for some of our listeners that may not know?
Yeah, absolutely. Sandbagging is basically you've got a quick car or a very quick car, but you just don't use the full potential of it. You basically weigh yourself down and you slow yourself down so that...
You're foxing.
Foxing. Yeah. Sandbagging.
Playing ducks and drakes. So we've got Seb saying that the car's... he's positive about the car, which for him in pre-season is him glowing about the car. You know, he's not...
He did say the same thing last year.
Did he? Okay.
I don't think...
It seemed like a good car. I don't know what went wrong. Hopefully.
I don't think he was as excited last year as he was this year. You saw him the first day after testing and he was beaming. He was just excited.
Yep.
And I think it's a great pairing. It's a really exciting pairing with Leclerc and Vettel. They say that Leclerc's going to be the tail gunner. I'm looking forward to seeing those challenges. You know, he's a 2016
GP3.
2016 GP3 champion and 2017 F2. He had 7 wins in that.
He was impressive last year in F1 as well. He did well with Sauber.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He's earned his call up. He's dethroned Kimi Räikkönen, much to my dismay.
Yes.
I would like to have seen Kimi and Seb for another year together. But it's interesting. Is it going to be another, you know, Lewis Alonso, you know, a la McLaren?
I really hope so. That would be fantastic.
You know, who knows how it's going to be.
But you watched Leclerc last year. This is what excited me so much about him is the first 3 or 4 races with Sauber, now Alfa Romeo, he didn't do so well. He overdrove the car a couple of races and a couple of sessions. And he just suddenly went, I'm overdriving. Listened, learnt, and he came back stronger and much better driver.
Well, this might lead as a bit of a segue to the next team, guys. I think with Red Bull, before we get onto the livery of the car, which is, well, let's face it, it's pretty much the same as last year.
And the year before that.
And the year before that, probably. I think to a large degree, Max Verstappen did exactly as he said last year. I think he kind of... you know, realised that he'd been overdriving, trying to get past too many people.
But it took Max a lot longer learn that lesson.
Absolutely.
Than it took
Has he learned the lesson?
I think he's matured. He's in the same vein as Seb, and he's in the same vein as Lewis, where he is going to trample on toes. He doesn't care whose toes he tramples on. I think... to a degree, he's actually been the most least afraid driver of trampling on any toes. You know, he's come into this sport with no regard really for who he overtakes and who he may or may not crash into. Whether that's a great attitude to have or not remains to be debated, and you know, that debate will go on for a while, but I think he's certainly pulled back on sort of how he started.
He will become one of the all-time greats. He will be up there with Lewis Hamilton, Schumacher.
I disagree with that. I think if he behaves the way he did last season, let's think back to, you know, the Brazilian Grand Prix and him shoving Ocon in the pits and that blow up. I think the drivers, the paddock, will become very tired of him very quickly. I don't think you can behave like that in this day and age and keep your seat and everything be okay. I think if he behaves like that, he'll be gone. Or
if he does, but he'll
face punishment.
He should face punishment for those sorts of behaviours. But if he learns from it and grows from it, I mean, he's only what?
22 or something like that now?
Yeah, and he came in at like 18 or something, 17, 18. I mean, he's a kid.
Yep.
Simple as that. I mean, I've got kids in my workshop that... You know, I want to box around the ears because...
This can be a subject for another day, I think. We could have a whole show on Max and what we think. Yep. I think we might do a segment on Max one day.
Not a bad idea.
But he will be one of the greats. I'm sorry, Michael. I think he will mature very quickly and he will suddenly become very good.
He's a tremendously talented driver, but he hasn't learned what battles are worth fighting and what aren't. To him, it's let's just go in here, guns blazing. It doesn't always need to be that way.
I want to be in front of you and I don't care.
Lewis had that attitude when he started. And it didn't take him too long to figure out that's not how I'm going to win championships. I need to be ruthless. I need to be aggressive. But there's a time and there's a place, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah, exactly. Lewis knows when to conserve his tyres. He knows knows when he needs to conserve fuel. That's something that Max doesn't seem to have really – the penny hasn't dropped for him there. But, you know, let's see if he does this year. Now, the other member of the Red Bull team, Pierre Gasly, upgraded from Toro Rosso. What do we think of Pierre, guys? I was reasonably impressed with him in 2018. I thought he made a pretty good show for himself. And him being moved up to the premier team, you know, of those two teams after only one season, that shows a lot of faith, because that team could have gone to a lot of other drivers, but they decided to stick with Pierre. So what do we think about Pierre, guys?
Pierre's going to be an exciting driver. Again, I think he's got a fairly adult head on his head, on his shoulders. He's smart. He's calculated. I think he's very, very much fits that Red Bull ethos, you know, fun guy, you know, that extreme sports style, you know, a little bit out there. He's going to be another good driver to watch in the years to come.
Yeah.
Is he going to be a world champion driver? Yes, he probably will hit a championship. Is he a Valtteri Bottas? No, I don't think he's that level, but I think he'll be good.
I think he'll be number two, like Bottas. I don't see him outdoing Verstappen. I don't see the team doing anything to help him outdo Verstappen. So
no.
We'll have to watch that space.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting little battle.
I don't think he's of the caliber of Daniel, but Red Bull's loss is definitely Renault's gain, and that's where we move on to next.
Yep.
It's a cracking-looking car, guys.
Oh, it is. It is.
I'm really excited for Renault this year.
Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
Are they going to top Red Bull? Are they going to be third in the championship and Red Bull fourth?
I would love to see them get two race wins. That I reckon would put them ahead of possibly Red Bull. They could do that.
I'd love to see some podiums and some wins would be fantastic. But then they're not saying that that's what they're going to achieve this year. That's not what their goal was.
Mm-hmm.
Their goal is 2020 for championship.
If there's one thing we all know about Daniel, is that Mr. Ricciardo he's not backwards in going forwards. And we know that he often starts at the back of the grid. Well, he has often started at the back of the grid with the Red Bull team, and he fights like all blazing hell fury to get to the front.
They call him the honey badger for nothing.
Exactly right.
He will drive the wheels off that car. The problem is that rubber band motor from Renault.
Here we go.
I really hope that they've got it together. I really want Daniel to do well, but that Renault motor is always a concern. Having said all that, you know, there's a lot of money that Renault are pumping in a lot of money into this. They're going to expect a return. So let's hope that they've made real improvements. And with the new regulations that we'll discuss as well, they're trying to make downforce less prominent. That's going to hurt Red Bull, and that's Renault's gain there as well. So
absolutely. Yeah.
I will say this as well, actually. Potentially the strongest driver lineup on the grid. You got Daniel and you got Nico Hülkenberg. Nico, great driver, really underrated, and we know Daniel's great. That is a tremendous lineup. That lineup there is better than Red Bull's lineup.
Absolutely. They've got experience. They've got race wins in them. Hülkenberg's, I think, now the longest standing run without a podium finish.
Wow. That is not an honour you want.
It's not an honour you want.
That puts you in the class of people like Brundle. You don't want to be there.
Okay. All right. So we like the livery. We like the team overall. I think they've got a lot of promise this year, and the regs, like you said, boys, I think would hopefully fall their way somewhat. Moving on to a very, very cool-looking car this year.
Haas, yeah.
This has been voted, actually.
Renault-esque.
I think this got voted by the Lotus? Formula1.com.
When it was Renault, the Lotus Renault that they had.
Yeah, yeah.
It got still a Renault. Voted the most popular livery so far by the Formula1.com.
Oh, it looks great. Great.
Fans.
Everyone loves a bit of black and gold.
Mm.
but the driver lineup lets it down.
Yeah, you got Romain Grosjean and who's the other guy?
Magnussen, Kevin Magnussen.
Who's, was he ever done? He raced for McLaren for one season, if I'm not mistaken, for the, was it the 2014 season? He raced with...
2014-2015 season, he raced with McLaren.
Wow. Okay, so he's got some experience at a premier team. That was before McLaren wasn't amazing. I guess, he's got a bit of experience. Look, does this team lineup blow anybody away?
No.
It's look, they're good drivers. I mean, they're better than I can drive, obviously.
I'll tell you what, I reckon if Romain rocked up here and you know, we were going to go laps around, the ring route around Adelaide in a couple of, chuck us in some I-30Ns or something like that, I reckon I'd have a chance at getting past Romain. The only thing that would stop it from happening is him crashing into me or crashing into...
Well, I was about to say, you want to make sure your insurance policy is paid up if he's going to be driving.
Cool. All right. So moving on, guys, who have we got next? Speaking of that
McLaren
team.
McLaren.
Yes.
McLaren's up next. So we've got Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris, another young, exciting driver. What was he? The 2016 Euro Renault champion.
He's got a couple of championships there, I think. For
2017 Euro F3 champion and F2 of 2018, he was the runner-up.
Yep. So he come in with a great pedigree. He seems to be the big hope coming out of Great Britain. He's going to be very exciting. So let's watch out for him. And the other team member is
Carlos
Sainz. Now, Carlos is actually probably he's not my dark horse, but obviously I'm very biased towards following Daniel as an Aussie, Daniel Ricciardo. But Carlos, I've always had a very, very soft spot for. I'm very impressed by his pedigree, having a father win a WRC championship. And I've always thought that he's just come in, done his job, been very impressive and very consistent. I'm hoping that his change to a team outside of the Red Bull family will reap him rewards. And
I had a soft spot for him last year.
Mm-hmm.
Not last year, the year before, when he was with Toro Rosso. When he switched to Renault, I sort of lost my love for him a little bit. I didn't think he performed as well as he should have done last year. He still did well, but I think he could have done better.
Cool. All right. Well, enough about McLaren. All right, let's talk about their car. What does their car look like? They've got a bit of a strange setup this year. They've got the orange and the blue. And the,
I'm not sure I like that car.
Yeah, it's
not
it's,
a great looking car.
Nah, it's
the overalls the guys are wearing with their pixelated blue and orange split. It just looks cheap and nasty to me.
Yeah. Yeah, like you could see that car being sponsored by Cheapest Chips or something like that. All right, so moving on, guys, to the next team, Racing Point. What do we got to say about these guys?
Formerly known as Force India.
Formerly known.
But now called Racing Point because...
Much better name for a Formula One team. Yeah, it was Force India. Look, do we really care if your team's from India? We don't really want a team called Force Australia. Look, to be honest, I think it would never sat right with me. Yes, I understand they wanted to bring the Indian population into the sport. They wanted to, you know, there's a billion potential viewers there. The race in India doesn't happen anymore. That only happened for, what, one or two seasons, maybe three seasons. I just think it's great that...
Oh, I agree with you. Good to get the name of the team away from a country.
Yep.
Good-looking car. I like the pink. Always like the pink. I thought Force India was a good-looking car.
Yep.
They've got a little bit of blue there now.
It took me a little while with that pink car. It was a little bit of a shock to the system first time out. I'm like, oh, pink car, that's very bright.
Driver lineup.
But I like it.
Lineup, guys, what do we think? Perez, good. Not great.
Perez has always been a solid performer.
Checo.
He should have gone into a higher team, could have done better, but never quite. I mean, he got into McLaren for a season and then was ousted.
Continue with...
Not much to say about Lance Stroll, the other driver there. probably the most undeserving driver on the grid. Well, most undeserving driver since Maldonado.
Hasn't his father bought out a large share of Lance, that's why Williams changed the name.
And that's why he was there. His dad was funding Williams, and now his dad's heavily involved in the finances behind it now. Yeah, Racing Point.
And so,
he's bought his son a seat. And
Daddy bought me a new car.
Does he? He's got a podium to his name, though, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, yeah, Nate. Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Last year or the year before?
That's not an easy track to race. I think the Chooks haven't come home to roost on this one yet. I think there's still time for Mr. Stroll to maybe stroll his way to a bit more of a definitive F1 career. But hey, look, let's see how it pans out this year. He's going to have his father backing him. So let's hope that they can come together and put a good package together. Now onto a how do we describe this team? Alfa Romeo. Now formerly known as Mikey.
Sauber F1 team.
What do we think of these guys?
Car looks great.
Mm-hmm. It's a very nice looking car.
Oh. That looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. That car. It is the best looking car on the track.
I think it's up there. It is
fantastic.
I reckon it's the best.
They've done a great job. The Alfa all over, it's great. I'd love if it was powered by an Alfa motor. It is a Ferrari motor, so.
Same, only slightly different.
Yeah.
If it was an Alfa motor.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Wouldn't you need to, like, just replace the engine every race?
Yeah, well, you'd have a couple of good races and then a couple of bad ones. It might start for qualifying, it might not, but it's part of the joy of owning an Alfa.
Kimmy, Iceman, love him.
I didn't. It took me years to find that one. I just couldn't get used to him. But now I've gotten his dry humor. His, you know, shut up, I know what I'm doing.
Leave me
alone, I know what I'm doing.
That's terrible. And, terrible.
Steering wheel, give me the steering wheel.
Give me an ice cream.
I've really begun to like him. And since he's gone from Ferrari to Sauber or now Alfa Romeo, I'm really excited to see how he does that and how he's going to develop that team, because he's going to be the guy that gives the engineers the feedback on how that car needs to be constructed and built.
Now, Mr. His partner in crime there at Alfa, Antonio Giovinazzi.
He is blessed having, I think, Kimi as a teammate. He's going to learn so much off Kimi. He's got a great opportunity there.
That's if Kimi ever actually talks to him.
It's very interesting. I mean, you've got someone with so much experience in Kimi, and you've got a young guy, a couple of Grand Prix under his belt where he stood in at Sauber. Was it last season, season before? It might have been season before.
Yeah,
2017. And he's got some practice, Friday practices under his belt. Interesting makeup, the experience, the youth, a team that's, well, Alpha's just sort of got involved with Sauber and they're in its infancy, but hopefully it can go somewhere good. Very interesting. Not what we normally would see a Ferrari back team Ferrari influence team.
Now, what do we know there? If we don't know, guys, let's we'll just move on. But do we know if there's a chance that Alfa will actually develop their own engine, or will they always be a Ferrari?
I don't think they will.
I think it'll be a Ferrari engine, Ferrari support,
essentially a Ferrari feeder team.
Correct. Yeah. It'll be like Toro Rosso to Red Bull.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Alrighty, two teams to go, guys. So speaking of Toro Rosso to Red Bull, it seemed to segue quite nicely. Daniel Ball, who have we got here? We got.
How the hell did Danny Kvyat get back in again? I thought Red Bull, once they decided they bumped someone, that was it. You've been executed. Goodbye. Go find your own way. I mean, he looked very promising when he first came in from Toro Rosso.
He's got the dirt on helmet. he's got an incriminating photo in some Russian hotel room, a la Donald Trump.
Right, that's what it is. Until they started calling him the torpedo.
Somehow Max Verstappen didn't get tarred quite badly as Kvyat did when they started playing, you know, dive down the inside and hopefully I'll make it games.
Well, the thing was, yeah, he didn't get tarred as badly because he could win. He could get past them and win, whereas Daniil, he got, you know, he crashed into his teammate or, you know, whoever he crashed into, and he, or you know, if he managed to squeeze past them, he didn't actually go anywhere.
Yep.
I think you know, there's a difference between smacking into someone and actually getting past them, you know, bumping wheels and moving on and winning a race or getting a podium. And
you Danny, think there'd be more behind the scenes? It must have been more than just that. There must be some behind the scenes behavioural insubordinate, something that had him ousted. But the fact that he's back is surprising, very surprising.
Very surprising. Well, what did he came up from Toro Rosso to Red Bull.
Yep.
And he got ousted from Red Bull back to Toro Rosso.
That's right. 2016-17 he was there. And then he was
towards the end of the season, he got booted out the last couple of races.
Yep.
Is there academy struggling? Is that why he's back? Is it not anything to do with him? It's just a lack of talent.
I don't think they've got Red Bull have the pool of talent as they used to have a couple of years ago, where they had this massive pool of talent.
Mm.
Well,
the interesting thing that Danny did last year, he was a simulator test driver, but he also did some wet weather testing for Ferrari at Fiorano in April last year. So he's got his head around the Ferrari. So,
and that's going to do fantastic for Toro Rosso to feed into their business and their platform.
Hmm.
For the experience that he's learned on how they do their business.
Exactly. So the other guy that is racing for Toro Rosso, his name is Alexander Albon or Alex Albon. He's a British-born Thai competitor. I'm guessing that there's some sort of connection going back with Red Bull being originally based.
2012 Red Bull Junior.
Yep.
Started off back then, and I don't think he was ever on anybody's radar.
No.
Up until basically he got announced, and I think he was a bit surprised that he got announced as well as their driver. He's got, as far as we're aware, no championships to his name, so no F2 championships, no F3 championships.
Did very well in the 2018 season of the FIA Formula 2 season.
Right.
So last year he obtained 4 victories in that season. I think he came third in the championship. Third in
Formula 2, yeah.
So that's not bad.
He did finish second in GP3 a few years back in 2016 as well.
So he can drive.
So he's a good driver. He's got the pedigree there. He's just unproven in an F1 car, which is, you know, a very different machine. A lot more power, a lot more downforce.
Yeah, I've just noticed here, looking at his Wikipedia entry, guys, I don't know how he's going to go. He's a practicing Buddhist. Now, I've just got a little bit of a concern for all of the bugs that are going to get squashed as he goes around. I don't know how he's going to go with that, but, let's... All jokes aside, let's wish him well for the 2019 season.
And just one thing, and I think if anyone's been watching practice, he's got a green light on the back of his car.
He certainly does.
Everyone else has red. The green light is he actually doesn't have his super license yet. You've got to do a certain number of Ks before you actually get your super license. And you can't race in F1 without your super license.
How's he got a race seat?
He's got to rack him up in testing. He's got to rack him up, a certain amount of laps.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many.
A certain amount of Ks or something like that, he'll rack up.
It's like 500 Ks or something like that.
In an F1 car to get his super license so that he can actually race in the series. And they're jamming him into him over the next two test series.
Test periods. Yes. Alrighty, moving on, guys. Once again, last but certainly not least, if you've been...
No, definitely least.
Definitely least. Well, I was thinking in terms of more overall historical and personality-wise, what are you writing? I don't know what you've written there. We're talking about Williams.
But
Tie killers.
No, they killed Senna is what he's written down. Which they did.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay, I didn't think we were ever going to go there, but rightio, yeah, you've done
here
it.
We are. Okay. That's why I was writing it rather than saying it out loud.
So, Williams, boys, that was a very awkward introduction to
horrible-looking car. It is a horrible-looking car.
I'm going to say it is probably the worst liveries we've got.
I read online one of the F1 journalists, he described it as the, you know, like the blue toilet rim cleaner.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then you let toilet it just, duck? Yeah, toilet duck.
Oh, that's not a good description.
And he goes, it's a bit of a metaphor for what they've
produced.
Now.
Oh, man.
Down the toilet, mate.
I'm so disappointed with what's happened to Williams over the last couple of years. They've just gone backwards at a rapid rate.
Mm.
They finished up last on the championship, Constructors Championship last year.
Where's their end game? Like, is there a point where they can't compete? How long do they carry on?
Till the money runs out or people don't give the money. Mm. Someone may buy them out. You know, Claire Williams may decide to, you know, it's too hard and I want out. But
I don't think she'll, after watching the Williams doco on Netflix, I believe she will never give up. She will fight till the very last red cent.
I agree with you. I think she will.
I think they weather the next few years until Liberty Media come up with a proper direction for the sport. Once, you know, they set the formula in motion as to what F1 will be with regard to engine size and regulations and whatnot, you'd probably see a manufacturer buy them out just for the historical side of it.
Potentially.
Could it be a Volkswagen, a BMW? Could they come back?
Yep.
Would Honda decide they want a team for themselves?
No, I think the pairing of Red Bull Honda will be fairly cemented unless Red Bull pull out in 2019, which, you know, Helmut Marko threatens these things along with every other team boss as well, threatens these sorts of things.
Interesting driver lineup, though.
Very interesting. You got a very, very big hope in George Russell. Seems to be
PowerPoint man.
What do you mean by that, mate?
So to get his drive at Williams, he did a presentation, a PowerPoint presentation as to why they should hire him.
Wow, that's huge. Yeah. I don't think that's been done ever.
No, it's never been done before.
I didn't even know PowerPoint presentations were still a thing. But
you would think winning the Formula 2 championship would be enough. But
Formula 1 is more than just winning a championship to your name. It's you know, your ability to give feedback to the engineers on how the car.
He's 21 years old. You know, he's a young dude.
And he's tall. He's quite a tall young lad, but scrawny, skinny kind of guy.
Well, they've got two big drivers, don't they?
Mm. Well, the next driver, let's be frank, for every F1 fan, this is the most exciting addition.
Absolutely.
To the 2019 grid.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed that he's probably in a back marker car, unfortunately.
Doesn't matter.
The fact that he's on the grid, we're talking about Robert Kubica, our favourite pole, injured, I think it was 2011.
Yeah,
he spent 8 years. Before the 2011 season started.
In a rally accident.
The man has overcome a lot of adversity, had to, you know, a lot of occupational therapy to get where he is. I mean, he got back in cars, he's raced at different levels, but to get back to the pinnacle of F1, that is something special. I really wish it happened sooner for him. The fact that it's happened now, that's great. I'll be cheering him on. We all wish him well.
The guy's driven but to want to achieve and win. I'm disappointed that he's in a clear back market team. I really wish he got into Renault last year or the year before. I think he was trying to get into Renault. Yeah.
He had a history. He raced for Renault previously, didn't
yeah.
he? So, I'm going to play devil's advocate here a little bit, guys. Is Robert Kubica's hiring at Williams merely a ploy by Williams to gain sympathy, to gain the fan vote, the popular vote, maybe encourage a few?
It's a heartwarming story to tell.
It is, isn't it?
And if Williams managed to give him a car that's half decent, that puts him up the front a little bit, he might suddenly, you're absolutely right, it'll be a story for Williams to tell. This is what we've done. And imagine what we can do with a sell point to our sponsors and things.
Yep. Yeah. Do you think he can beat?
Can he beat?
Can he beat?
Can he beat George Russell? Yes.
Absolutely.
Of course he can.
Smoke him.
He's got the experience. He's got the talent. If his health holds up, I don't see why not. And he's been around the block the last few years. I mean, he's been testing and whatnot. He hasn't been shown up. He's done everything well. So I think he would do well. He'll add a lot of experience to Williams, which they need. They do have a Mercedes engine. So
my concern is with his hand and his arm, is when you watch him, some of the in-car stuff I've watched of him, when the car's going fine and when it's, you know, just as straightforward, I'm just chasing the line, he does it quite well. Yeah, you know, if he has to turn a tight corner, you watch him drop the hand off and then grab the other side of the steering wheel and pull it round because he physically can't turn it in that lower position. My concern is if he starts getting unstuck, you know, he hits a curb and the car begins to get crossed up or something like that, is he going to be able to wrestle the car back without finding a barrier or spearing off the track?
Yep. Losing traction and just sending it.
Yeah, and not being able to, you know, grab the wheels of it. That's probably my biggest concern. I think he's probably got that fairly well managed, I suspect, or the Williams and those believe that he can deal with it. So it should be a good driver to see.
Well, that's all the drivers, all the teams.
We're going to have a chat about
some of the new regulations for the season.
That's right.
And then we'll tease our next show where we're going to debrief the winter testing.
That's right. So we've got a few change, or quite a few changes actually, for the 2019 season. What is new? Okay, so let's start off.
Well, beyond what's just new, what are they trying to achieve? Most importantly, what is Liberty Media trying to achieve with these new reg changes?
Simplified aerodynamics that allow the car behind to travel closer to the car in front. Minimize the dirty air. That's what they're trying to do.
Why do they want to do that?
That's the problem F1 has had for a long time. We've got the DRSs, which helps. I think that's the best thing they've done to help with the dirty air.
That's a false fix. So that was a Band-Aid over a gaping wound, basically.
Well, when you've got cars generating that much downforce, there's always going to be the dirty air behind.
Well, I think it was 2009 they had an aero discussion about how they're going to manufacture these cars. And for the life of me, I now can't remember who the three people that were heavily involved in it. But all the other teams, they came with in-wash cars, so cars, all the air washed in back over the car. Every other team came with outwash cars, pushed all the air out around the side of the car, which made dirty air behind you, bad vortexes behind you, which made it almost impossible to follow. If I was an engineer, I'd design my car exactly like that.
But the outwash leads to greater downforce.
Correct.
And that's why they've done it. We've given up on, you know, creating more powerful engines. We've got tyres that give out very quickly. We've tried to simplify a lot of things. And what you're left with is downforce. That's how we've clawed back. That's how these cars are able to do times faster than the V12s, V10s, the V8s. They're doing it because of the downforce.
Grip.
You take that away, they're going to be slower. You lose the spectacle. You can't have them going slower. Something's got to give. The DRS thinks a good solution to it. This, we'll wait and see whether it makes much of a difference. They're taking off a few of the, you know, fancy add-on little winglets and tips and this and that. They're trying to streamline it. Whether it makes a difference.
The idea is make the front wing wider, deeper, so it gives you more downforce but is less affected in the dirty air. That is the concept of that front wing. It's basically to try and control that air. So when you are in the dirty air, when you've got that bigger wing, you're less affected by that dirty air and you're able to hold that front end grip.
Cool.
It washes over onto the rear wing as well.
Yep.
You know, it's simplified.
That's
larger.
Taller, that's up. Height of that is up by 20 mil and it's wider by 100 mil. So a bigger rear wing all around. Will create more wash? I think, won't it?
It will, but I think it's clean wash at the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's really how when they engineer and they look at the car, they look at the whole aero package on the car,
mm-hmm.
on how, you know, everything interconnects with each other. You know, the front wing feeds into the barge boards, which feeds into the rear wing and the under tray, and how the whole system works together. So you can't take, you know, a Ferrari front wing and whack it on the Mercedes because it's not going to work the same.
Yep. They're created to in a symbiotic relationship.
Correct.
Okay, so what else have we got, guys? Something about a barge board. I guess that's it's the same
smaller,
thing.
Smaller, simplified.
Yeah,
airflow. I think that's really just done for sponsors.
Smaller and simplified brake ducts.
Correct.
It's all about cost cutting, simplifying, less dirty air.
Simplifying the aerodynamics.
The thing is, a lot of these, you know, they're making these changes, but we still don't know what's going to happen once they decide what the formula will be going on from 2020, 2021.
Mm. Well, these are...
Liberty Media haven't come out definitively and said this is where the sport's going and what we're doing.
But well, that's what the whole, I think this whole thing is. It's they've brought some of the 2021 regs. They've gone, okay, well, these are some of the things that we want to try and achieve. We'll pull some of these forward because these things are going to start into the 2021 season.
Mm. Biometric gloves, guys. I like this one. This one's pretty cool. So all of the drivers are going to be wearing specially monitored gloves that take heart rate, O2 levels in the blood, and transmit data back to the teams and the medical staff at the track. So if you know if a driver happens to have a very bad accident, they can monitor and see
Hülkenberg, 2018 upside down in the tire wall where and the car's on fire.
Yep.
What's that honestly going to tell them though?
I'll tell them if they have a.
They still need to rush to get the driver out. They're still going to talk to the driver.
But
is it a bit of
if they've let's say they've got a head trauma, but they can still see that there's a heart rate and there's a pulse and you know there's oxygen in the blood, you know, but the driver can't speak to the you know the radio doesn't work or whatever. Oh, I think that will help.
It's going to help them to know. You know what the state of play is before they even get there. They know this from when they're racing down the track to the driver.
They can prepare for.
They can prep for. You know, they can see he's got a heart rate. They can see that you know his blood level, oxygens are good, bad, mm-hmm. indifferent.
Let's hope they won't need it. But it sounds
absolutely.
To me, it sounds like a bit of hocus pocus. It's
maybe.
Yeah, not something the viewer's really ever going to engage with. Or
no,
absolutely not.
The rear, moving on, guys, rear wing end plate lights. So two additional rear lights, one on each end plate, and it's basically to increase visibility for the cars, which I think is essential to improve safety along with the halo, improved helmet design, et cetera. This is a really straightforward, good example of they probably should have had it for a long, long time, really. You know, technology's not new technology. LED lighting's been around for a long time. Thoughts?
It just increases the safeties. And it's a very simple, clear-cut way of doing it, particularly in low-light conditions. You know, Brazil 2017, during that storm, where it was, you know, horrendous conditions,
mm-hmm.
you know, to a point where you should have probably stopped the race. You know, at least you get less chance of a driver plowing into the back of you.
Yep.
Probably one of the more interesting ones is the increase in fuel. They've upped by 5 kilos the amount of fuel you can have for the race, which interesting. You know, all the fuel saving measures they bought in and now it's like they've gone the other way and decided we need to put more fuel in the car.
Well, for years, the last couple of years, the drivers have all been, lift and coast. They give themselves an 8-second gap and they lift and coast so that they can.
So that's not necessarily a bad thing if you're leading the race and you're, you know, half a lap in front a la Lewis. But if you're you know, that Red Bull, if you're that Renault, if you're that Ferrari that might be chasing Lewis, or, you know, let's hope he's in front. but you know, you want to have those cars that are chasing. You want to have them roaring at full potential. You don't want to have them backing off.
Absolutely.
Here's an idea for the future of the sport. You give them 110 kilos.
Yep.
And you put in whatever you want, whenever you want. Back to refueling.
Yep.
You've got a limit.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, so you're saying do one refuel, do 105 or 110 limit.
You need to have 110 kilos of fuel pumped into your car throughout the race.
Okay.
So whether you carry it all from the start,
and then you have to have a mandated fuel stop then.
You don't have to have a mandate. Well, you're stopping anyway for tyres.
You'd stop though, and your fuel stop would cost more. Like a tyre stop is 2.9 seconds, but a fuel stop always takes longer. That always used to take 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense to me as a.
It was more exciting racing when you had teams that would fuel light, they'd quali super light, and then you know you had two different strategies. So you know you had the strategy of the teams that would have heavy load, and they'd you know be sort of you know might be mid pack of the Q3, and then you had the teams that would light load and. No, they might get pole or you know top two grid spots.
Correct. You think about it. If you got some guys who might load up from the beginning, you don't know if they're going to put fuel in when they're stopping.
Yep.
You know what's their times comparative to other people's, and it all come together towards the end.
And the other cool thing, Mikey, just before you go on there, mate. Quite often, you didn't actually even know if they were fueled. I think they didn't actually officially tell you if they were fuel loaded or not. So that made it back even more day,
correct.
That made it even more interesting because it's a mystery to everybody who's watching.
I think absolutely. I'd love to see refueling come back because it does give you that. You know, as you say, light fuel, heavy fuel, but you'd have to. I think you'd have to have a mandated fuel stop.
Yeah, well, you're stopping anyway. There's a mandated. You got to change your tires. So it's at that point that you would put your fuel in. But if you want to load up your car from the beginning, you don't want to put fuel. If that's your strategy, if you think that works best, go for it. If you think, you know what, I'm stopping twice and I'm going to splash some fuel in at each interval and I think my car will go faster on average throughout the race because I'm not carrying 110 kilos at the beginning.
You know, do two splash and dashes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm carrying 30 kilos at the beginning and then I'll, you know, split the remaining 80 kilos over two stops, so 40 and 40.
It would certainly make it a bit more interesting.
How will I think that'd be really cool. Refueling really added an extra dimension. You never knew where all the guys were. Like Izzy said, you didn't know how much they started with. Some guys were quick, some weren't. Some were, you know, making one stop. Others were doing three. The days of three stops, three splash and dashes, and you come out and where are they at the end? And there they are fighting for it still. It was good racing.
Bring back fuel restocking, please. I think that's we've agreed on it.
Cool. One thing we've glanced over, guys, I think this is a very, very good revision for 2019 that is going to simplify and make it much, much clearer and simpler for everybody watching is the revised tyre colours. So remember in 2018 there were five tyre colours.
The hyper soft, the soft.
Super soft, hyper soft, super soft. Soft, mediums, and hards. So it was five categories, and they're all a different color. And if you happen to be sitting watching the race with somebody who had never raced before, who had never watched a race before, they would say, "Why has this guy got yellow tires? Why has this guy got pink tires? Why has this guy got purple tires?" And it was just confusing. Now, from what they're going to do, they're still going to have five different compounds of dry race tires. They're simply going to, for each race meeting, nominate three sets, three compounds. Three grades,
yep.
Yep. And they'll be white, yellow, and red.
So you might have hyper soft, for instance.
Yes.
But it's still coloured red like a super soft.
Yep. Yes. Exactly. Much simpler. And
your softest compound is going to be red, but the softest compound could be, you know, it could be just the soft. That might not bring to a certain track anything better than a soft.
Yep.
And we don't really care as viewers whether a tire is a hyper soft or whether it's a super soft. The differentiation we didn't care about.
I'm going to disagree with you on that, Izzy. I loved the different, you know, the five different ones. And, you know, when they could bring, you know, some might bring an ultra soft, some might bring a super soft. You know, they had the choice to bring whatever they wanted for that weekend.
Yep.
And they were changing it up a bit. I liked that.
It just made it, made it uneven though, Mikey, and it made it inconsistent and it was hard to, yeah, I think you want the drivers in the same equipment. And if one team had happened to make a mistake for that race, that would, you know, negatively impact their whole race. Whereas if teams are limited to three compounds for that race, I think there's much less differentiation with teams opting for a not so optimal tire, which means that we should get better racing.
I just think the more variables, the more fun it makes it, and the more chance that it becomes exciting. That's my take on it.
Cool. What are you taking a photo of there, Daddy? All righty. So one or two more changes. So last things that I can think of at the minute would be one of the biggest changes is the car and driver weight. So that's been increased from 733 kilos to 740 kilos, which means that it's going to advantage the bigger drivers in the field, meaning that those who do not have they're not as heavy as the bigger drivers, they'll have to put some ballast in the cars. So what do you guys think about that one?
Sensible. Try and even out. Stature of the driver out of the equation. I mean, guys like Nico Hülkenberg, bigger guys, they can suffer. Mark Webber's.
Hopefully bring in, you know, get some of these heavier guys and bigger guys be able to get into the racing.
Stop it from, you know, almost turning into you need to be the size of a jockey to be in a car.
A packet of chips.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Few minor things here, guys, just in the notes, some miscellaneous things. Self-scrutineering, that seems pretty cool. So cars won't be scrutineered at the traditional sense. Teams will have to do a stat deck, and I'm guessing there's going to be some audits at some stage. So I think that's cool. Reduces the cost there a little bit. End of race signal, checkered flag will still be shown, but the official end of race signal is now a checkered light panel.
Is that to make up for the couple of debacles where someone's waved the flag?
Wrong flag.
A lap early.
Yeah. I think that's a fair call, a good idea.
Yep.
Mirror mods, small changes to the mirror regulations in light of the larger rear wing. So maintain adequate rear view visibility and safety. And onboard camera regulations have been modified to improve the TV spectacle. Now, I haven't actually seen a lot of the testing vision. Either of you guys seen much of it?
I've seen a little bit.
Have you noticed much of that, mate?
No, not as yet.
Okay. All right. So that'll be interesting to keep up with as we move on.
I think also 2019. Next year, not so much with the car regs, but with the TV spectacle, they're actually changing some of the camera positions. So it actually begins to show the speed of the car as well.
That sounds cool. That sounds like a really cool idea. Righty, guys. So thanks very much for
listening out there.
Yeah. Now we're going to have a chat about what we're going to talk about next week.
We'll be back next week. And we'll be talking about the winter testing. So I'm sure you guys have been following. We're halfway through the winter testing. We won't go into it really today, except to say that there's some exciting progress. And
some definite sandbagging going on.
Ferrari are doing well. It's very good for Ferrari.
So is the Honda engine, apparently. I'm baiting
Daniel and he's not saying anything. we'll go over all of that. We'll analyse the two winter tests that they're doing. One they've done, one is happening in the coming days.
Yep.
So we'll go over that, decipher it all, talk about our predictions for the coming season, and it'll be a nice Australian Grand Prix preview that we put on.
Sounds very exciting. I'm pretty amped for next week's show, guys.
Should be good.
Cool. All right, so leaving you from sunny Adelaide, we're all going to jump out of this air-conditioned lovely studio that we're in out to the sweltering 38-degree heat. We'll catch you next week. So that's Daniel Ball, Mike and Nicolo, and Izzy Reilly signing off from Box, 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 Formula One, the Aussie F1 podcast.